Welcome to the Money Rules Podcast, where we tackle your personal financial matters with leading financial advisors. Your host, Boitumelo Ntsoko.
Today we're discussing something that's on everyone's mind as the tax year draws to a close: how to save on income tax and optimize your investments for maximum tax efficiency. Whether you're a business owner, a high earner, or planning for retirement, there are actionable steps you can take before the end of the tax year to lower your tax bill and set yourself up for financial success. For more on this, we're joined by Alka Brink, a wealth advisor at PSG Wealth. Welcome to the show, Alka.
Thank you so much, Boitumelo. Thank you for having me.
Okay, let's start with investments. Many South Africans hold a mix of cash, bonds, and equities in their portfolios. Why is it important to be mindful of how income-producing assets are taxed, and what strategies would you recommend to minimize taxes on investment income?
Yes, so I think leading up to the end of the financial year, being end of February, it's always a good time to just have a bit of a check-in in a portfolio and seeing where you can maximize your, not only your portfolio and of course your returns, but also your taxation, as that plays almost an equal role in resilient planning in a portfolio. And I think, of course, as your portfolio accumulates over time, the taxation planning becomes equally important. So planning for the inefficiencies, but also making sure that you are optimizing what you are allowed to do every year. And I think a lot of that falls within the investment product space. And a lot of it comes with where I would always recommend working with an auditor or working with a tax advisor as well, with your wealth advisor, to know that you're planning correctly from the start. Now, one of the first starting points when it comes to income tax specifically that I would recommend investors to be wary of or to look at is to firstly be aware of how much cash you hold, cash or bonds. So typically, anything that is interest-bearing, so something that you earn interest on, so this would be cash in the bank, but it can also be cash or bond exposure within a portfolio that you are now earning a yield on. You as an individual have an annual exclusion, and this exclusion differs when you're younger than 65 or older than 65, then you have a larger exclusion. But if you're earning a yield higher than that exclusion and you earned a return of, let's say at the moment with a high interest rate environment, cash was for a long time giving us 9%. Bonds is doing more than that. It's 10% and upwards. So that return that you're getting over and above your exclusion is seen as an income. So this is taxed at your marginal rate. So it's quite important to be very careful to not hold too much cash or bonds. Otherwise, it's going to have a negative tax implication. So depending on what your marginal tax rate is, you can be taxed up to 45% on cash you hold. So what I typically normally recommend here is two different things. Firstly, diversify more with asset allocation. So ensuring that you're including equity exposure in your portfolio as well. That's good for two reasons. It minimizes your tax implications, but on the other side, it does also diversify your portfolio out of a growth context. So equities will always provide a higher return compared to cash and bonds. So just playing around with asset allocation to ensure that you're optimizing your tax implications. And secondly, depending on the fund value, you can also use more optimal vehicles. So using endowments or sinking funds, where we can typically limit the taxation effect. And the benefit with these products is you can cap your income tax at 30%. So if you, for some reason, specifically want to hold these asset classes, we can at least decrease the tax implication. And we address other things with these type of vehicles as well. We automatically take this product out of the liquidity structure it's in, and we give you the benefit that you can now nominate a beneficiary on the product. So you know it can also go to your loved ones directly.
Alka, tax-free savings accounts are often hailed as a no-brainer for tax efficiency. Can you walk us through the role TFSAs play in building wealth over the long term and how people can maximize their benefits?
No, I think this is a very underutilized product still, and I think it's a fantastic product for each individual to hold. So when we look at the bigger picture, and I think when planning investment portfolios, it's always good to take a bit of a bird's eye view of what the ideal portfolio looks like. And that will always consist out of three or four different products, as they all have different tax benefits, different rules, and different strategies as to how we invest them. So typically when you reach retirement, which I guess most of us are planning for, you want to optimize two or three different products so that you can ensure that you're paying the least tax on your income. Now, a tax-free investment can actually play a fantastic role in most people's portfolios. So in principle, you are allowed to invest 36,000 rands per annum and 500,000 rands in your lifetime. So it takes about 14 years to fill up this investment out of a contribution perspective. But this, of course, is growing. There's no limit on your growth. Another benefit of this product is that you can invest it any way you wish to. So you can invest it 100% in equity exposure or 100% in a feeder fund with offshore exposure. So comparing that to your retirement funds, who are, for example, more regulated, you just have a little bit more flexibility in terms of diversification. So what then essentially happens is now you're earning this compounding effect, but you're never going to pay a cent tax on the proceeds of it. So you can easily, if you just pull up the investment and you invested 100% in equity, this investment will be closer to 1.5 to 2 million rands after the 14 years. And then you can go even further and just let it lie there and compound. And essentially, you create a few million rands lying there that you can live off monthly without paying tax. So if this can be supplemented even as a retirement plan and supplementing your income, it's a great strategy. But if there was a need to withdraw this product earlier in your life, it's still fantastic planning within your portfolio without incurring any tax. What I do want to add here, I think to really optimize the product, it is important how you invest it. So what we see a lot in the investment space is that typically investors who structure tax-free through a bank, they tend to invest the tax-free in cash and bonds. And so they invested much more conservatively compared to a 100% equity strategy that you're actually allowed to do in a tax-free. So then you're just not benefiting from all the tax benefits of this product. So I would just really make sure my investment strategy is in line with what the benefits of the product are, taking into account you're never going to pay income tax on it, you're never going to pay capital gains tax on it. So optimize the growth on this structure while you can. But I would make it part of a longer-term strategy in my portfolio. You can literally live off this portfolio one day and not pay any income tax.
So what should listeners avoid doing with their TFSAs to ensure they're truly optimizing their tax efficiency?
I think when it comes to the TFSAs, there's a few principles that I think are important. I think firstly, trying to actually fill up the investment every year. So trying to reach that full 36,000 per annum and reaching your 500,000 limit. And then the second thing, and trying not to touch it before then. So technically, it's tax-free is accessible. But if you withdraw from it during your build-up phase, you can never add that year back again. So then you kind of lose that year's contribution. So I would really see this investment as a long-term strategy. Then my second piece of advice would be to invest it in 100% growth assets. I mean, if you're going to be aiming to fill this product up, it's a 14-year plan at least. So I would definitely recommend seeing it as a long-term strategy. With any other type of a accessible investment or a share portfolio, you're going to be paying some form of tax. So either capital gains tax or income tax or some form of it, where with this product, you're not going to be paying any of it. So I think really optimizing the growth and the compounding effect within the portfolio over time.
Alka, retirement annuities and company retirement funds offer significant tax advantages. Could you explain how contributing up to the 27.5% limit and, of course, leveraging Section 10C can reduce taxable income and provide benefits at retirement?
Yeah, so I think when we look at the holistic view again, I think starting off with perhaps on the one side, having your tax-free investment. Secondly, looking at your retirement funds, which I think is a fantastic product to use for any investor. And this can be a combination of your retirement fund you have at work, if your employer offers one, and a personal retirement annuity in your own capacity, or a combination of the two. So in principle, what the law says is that you are allowed to invest up to 27.5% of your taxable income on an annual basis into these products. And you can claim all of that back from SARS annually, up to a maximum of 350,000 rand a year. So you can do this in a combination. So the one at work and perhaps one in your private capacity if you want to diversify a bit. The benefit with ones at work is that, of course, it gets deducted before you earn your income. So it does decrease your taxable income and it happens automatically. So it's not that it's going off your net income. So I think you almost get used to it. So I think that can be planned very well within your portfolio. With the RA, the tax benefit over time, and you're in your private capacity, it's just a backwards benefit. So once a year, you can now claim that back from SARS and receive the payback from SARS, where I think sometimes the immediate feeling is sometimes better within a company fund. But I would do the comparison of how is the company fund invested compared to my private retirement annuity and base it on management style investment portfolio options. And then you can now optimize this 27.5%. So that's a full deduction on an annual basis, which I would firstly try to reach as quickly as possible. Secondly, once you start planning for the view of retirement, there's a really cool benefit that I know we have been speaking on MoneyWeb quite a bit about, but I think it is still very underutilized and not well known, but it's referred to as Article 10C. So this comes down to if you were to over-contribute, so you're doing more than your 27.5% on an annual basis or more than your 350,000 maximum benefit. So what it comes down to is you can only now for the next year claim back that limit, so the 27.5% or the maximum of 350,000. Anything you've over-contributed above that is referred to as a disallowed contribution. And this essentially starts building up a pool. And this pool you can now use the day you retire. So the day you retire, which can be anything after the age of 55, we convert your retirement vehicles into a living or a life annuity. Let's say we choose a living annuity. You would now start earning an income and you would be liable to pay normal pay-as-you-earn tax on this income you chose. If you have this disallowed contributions pool built up, you can use this pool to offset the income tax payable. So essentially, the larger the pool you can build up before retirement, the longer you essentially don't have to pay income tax at retirement. So if you can optimize the combination of a few benefits, the combination of your tax-free investment together with this Article 10C for a few years, you can essentially create a retirement where for a few years you do not have to pay any tax at all, which on the one side, of course, stretches your capital with quite a few years, which essentially means you need less, I guess, at retirement. But on the other side, it just optimizes the income you can earn and the net income you can earn because you don't have to also calculate for the income tax you have to pay. And lastly, specifically referring to the retirement funds, I think, which makes it a fantastic benefit to make part of your holistic planning. It's a great plan to plan for estate planning. So keep in mind with investment portfolios, this always forms part of the planning. If you are planning to ensure that your family is going to be okay if you are not here anymore, the vehicles you choose in your investment portfolio becomes very important in terms of if it's anyhow an accessible type of product or a product you cannot nominate a beneficiary on, this will typically go to your estate. So not only is there estate duty tax payable on it, but it's also a timeline thing. So most clients I've dealt with in the last few months have been struggling winding up an estate anything between 1 and 4 years. So you typically don't want to leave a family struggling for that long to just gain access to funds. So using retirement vehicles to ensure that efficiency with estate planning is a fantastic benefit as well, as retirement products are completely excluded from the estate and they would go to your beneficiaries directly.
Elke, for high income earners, sinking funds and endowments are popular tools to cap taxes. Can you unpack how these work and why they're particularly beneficial for certain investors?
Yeah, I think it's a fantastic product. Again, quickly touching on what I just referred to, the estate planning benefit. So an endowment or a sinking fund is still a deemed asset in your estate. So there will be estate duty calculated on it, but it goes to the beneficiary directly. So what makes it a fantastic product is automatically the beneficiary. So I specifically advise sinking funds more because I quite like the fact that the beneficiary becomes the new owner. So in that sense, you can have technically a liquid investment, so an accessible investment, but knowing it can go to your beneficiaries directly should you pass away. But the main benefit with this product is that you essentially firstly cap your income tax at 30%. So if you, for any reason, fall on the 30% or over mark with income tax, you have the benefit of limiting your income tax. And this has to effect, again, that the capital gains tax is limited to 12%, where that can typically be much higher for a higher net worth individual. So the sinking fund product has a local and a direct offshore version. The local version of it will have two tax scales typically. They would be the 30% income tax scale. So if you want to be in cash and bonds or any interest-bearing instrument, this component will be capped at 30%. If you are an equity exposure and you want to access these funds or make changes to the portfolio, your capital gains tax will be limited to 12%. So let's say you're 100% in equity and you make a withdrawal from this investment, it's taxed at 12%, which is great compared to the normal income tax scale. If we look at the direct offshore version, we have an offshore version that's located in Guernsey. And there, typically, everything is seen as a capital gain. So even if you are in cash, we can go into more detail how that is done. But typically, you can then access these funds and the tax implication will never be more than 12%. So it's a great way of having a bit of liquidity in your portfolio as these products are typically quite accessible. Secondly, you are limiting your taxation to quite a low rate. And lastly, you are creating continuity by knowing that you can nominate beneficiaries on this product as well and basically transfer wealth in a very easy way.
Okay, as you mentioned, offshore sinking funds have come with tax advantages and so do other international investment vehicles. So what should South Africans consider when incorporating these into their financial strategy?
Yeah, I think the direct offshore space becomes a very important space to navigate correctly from the start. I think for any South African, there's a lot of opportunity to be found to navigate in the direct offshore space. Automatically, of course, if you are investing in US dollars, you can invest with different fund managers and you can invest into different type of equities that we don't get locally with a feeder fund and rand denominated portfolios. You also get to navigate with larger fund managers, which I think is really beneficial. But the rules are different in different countries. And I think that's something to just be very aware of once you start moving in different jurisdictions. Even if you are considering tax havens are not all tax-free. And I think that's important, especially from a estate duty planning. So what we typically warn investors against is that other countries have what we refer to as probate or situs tax. It's typically their version of a estate duty tax payable. And then there are other taxes payable specifically for US and UK-based investments that they refer to as inheritance tax. And this typically works on a sliding scale, but it can go as high as a 40% tax rate. So if you think of a normal accessible product, then your South African beneficiary can potentially be liable to 40% inheritance tax and a version of capital gains tax. So paying over 40% tax just to see the funds for the first time. So that's something to be very wary of if you don't know the rules of the other country you're starting to invest in. And the benefit of a sinking fund is that we protect you against the rules. So by building this wrapper or this investment vehicle around your investment, you know what the rules are. So automatically you lock in your tax at 12% and you have that certainty that the beneficiaries nominated would become the new owners of the investment should you pass away. So you don't have to stress about an estate being wound up and offshore laws stepping in. Basically, this individual would just be taking over the investment product. So I would definitely, from day one, if you start navigating into the direct offshore space, make sure I use a vehicle like this from the start, as it becomes difficult later to change the vehicle as you would have to disinvest investments, of course, triggering tax and fees to get it into the right vehicle. So rather use the optimal vehicle from the start.
Harvesting losses is a strategy often used to offset capital gains taxes. What should investors consider before selling underperforming assets to reduce their tax burden?
Yeah, so tax harvesting is a great strategy within a high net worth portfolio's planning. And I think that's where it becomes very valuable to put your wealth advisor and your tax advisor auditor around the same table so that our planning can complement each other. But typically what happens if we have certain investment vehicles, should it be a normal accessible product? Should it be an investment in a trust or in a company? There are certain taxations that will be liable either on changes made or just on gains earned within a portfolio on an annual basis. So if you have other accumulated losses within your portfolio that can be utilized to offset the gains that we've earned, you can create an ideal space by minimizing the taxation effects within a portfolio. So it's always good to just ensure that we are optimizing everything and that all the different planning components are speaking to each other in terms of trying to limit the taxation due on essentially growth earned.
For entrepreneurs or business owners, how can using a company structure help manage and reduce taxable income effectively? Are there specific tax saving opportunities that business owners often overlook?
There's definitely a lot of value to be found in structuring your portfolio in principle optimally. And I think for most individuals, there will be a time when a company as well as a trust plays a role in your portfolio. Here, I think the correct advice is very important because you also don't want to start building structures that firstly cost you a lot of money and have other impacts, which I'll touch on now, that you don't want to go to if it's not needed yet. But it does play a very valuable role, firstly, out of a continuity point of view. The main benefit normally with something like a company or a trust is this something that would not typically go to your estate. So you can automatically create that continuity in your family or in your business, ensuring that if you pass away, the continuity is there. But also different tax rates. So specifically with a company, that vehicle is taxed at a different rate. So it's taxed at company tax rate. So with certain investment products, especially so much more so if you have your own business, but with many different decisions from a property to certain investments we build, it would be more beneficial for the investment owner to build it within this vehicle. And you can at least create certain tax efficiencies, but also manage who is a part of this investment. I do think it's important in terms of what I just mentioned, especially navigating to trusts, that keeping in mind that all these type of structures are, you need to pay for them, of course. So it's important to offset the benefits of their vehicle and the taxation effect with what your needs are and if it's suitable for you. And to also remember that the moment you start building something like a trust, or in many ways, sometimes a company, you essentially step away from your asset. So you are not the only owner anymore. Or in some cases with a trust, you are not the owner at all anymore. So knowing that there would be trustees who make decisions on this vehicle or this asset, whatever it may be, maybe it's a house or a different type of property or a different type of asset. But there's definitely a place for it. And I think in many cases, once it comes to accessible type of portfolios, there are valuable roles to be found with using these type of structures. And keeping in mind with a trust, for example, that you can have various trustees and beneficiaries on a trust where out of a taxation point of view, we sometimes like that in terms of we have then, for example, six different beneficiaries where we can use everyone's annual capital gains tax allowance, for example. So there are sometimes benefits in terms of having these type of vehicles. And of course, how the vehicles speak to each other. So what your, how the company is, for example, structured to complement the trust and the other way around. So that's something I would definitely structure correctly from the start as well. You typically don't want to sell an asset and move the ownership again into an entity later on in life. You want to buy or structure it in the correct structure from day one as far as possible. So it's something I would definitely obtain advice from day one.
Just going back to retirement planning, for retirees or those nearing retirement, how can planning withdrawals strategically help them manage tax liabilities better?
I think we're in the ideal space when it comes to retirement specifically. I think what is important is knowing that you're in the ideal world, your income source will not just come from your retirement fund you have built up. I think it's important to know that if you were to, for example, just build your wealth within your retirement vehicles, and now we convert it into a living annuity and you start living off this investment, you're going to be on the normal pay as you earn tax table. So you typically want to create a scenario where you can rather draw a lower income from this living annuity, not only out of a capital preservation point of view, but out of an income tax point of view. So you want to lower the tax rate you're paying and rather supplement your monthly income from a combination of, for example, a sinking fund with a 12% tax rate, a tax-free investment with a 0% tax rate, and potentially another accessible vehicle where we can plan your income within your annual allowances so that you're essentially triggering very little tax or no tax at all. So I think the ideal portfolio would have more than one source of income so that we can ensure we're benefiting from all the different tax benefits that they all hold and how they can complement each other. So I would just plan that from the start. So how you plan this is ensuring that you have enough liquidity built up in a tax-free investment or a sinking fund or other type of vehicles apart from your retirement fund.
Alka, charitable giving offers both social and financial benefits. Can you explain how this strategy can be particularly tax efficient?
Yeah, so this is a great benefit for anyone who anyway wants to focus. Of course, I think we all try to navigate in the space that we at least want to also be good to others and give our dent where we can and how we can on an annual basis. Many institutions now have the benefit that you get what's referred to as a 18A certificate. So it's basically a tax deduction. So I think, yes, that should never be your primary reason to give, but I think it is a great benefit if it's anyhow an organization that you would want to give to and that you would want to donate to, and you can receive the certificate as well and be used as a tax deduction within your company or within your private structuring.
With the tax year end approaching, what would you say are the top three actions South Africans should prioritize to ensure they're taking full advantage of available tax breaks?
I think my first three focus areas would be firstly to optimize different products and optimize your asset allocation. My first focus would be to fill up my tax-free investment, so making sure you're doing the full 36. I would ensure as far as it's affordable to fill up my tax deduction on the retirement products, so reaching your 27.5%. Of course, if you can exceed that and start building up the 10C benefit, that would be the ideal world, but at least trying to get your maximum deduction of 27.5%. And then lastly, for various reasons, but specifically heading into a rate cutting cycle where the yield you are earning on cash and over the next two years over bonds will be much less. So the moment you start going into a rate cutting cycle, you're earning less growth on cash. And that has a major effect in financial planning in terms of one of our main goals are to outperform actual inflation. And to me, actual inflation is what your medical aid goes up with every year, what your real cost of living goes up every year. And that's not 3 to 6%. So I would be wary of being too heavily in cash. I know a lot of investors find it comfortable and find it predictable, but I think it's a dangerous place to be if you're not outperforming inflation, which that is already the case after two rate cuts. So that's something I would look into, ensuring you are diversifying with asset allocation. It's going to decrease your income tax effect and it's going to increase your growth. And yeah, just making sure that you are amending your portfolio again as we head into the new financial year.
And that brings us to the end of this episode. Thank you for joining us today, Alka, and sharing these much needed tips.
Thank you so much for having me too.
That was Alka Brink, a wealth advisor at PSG Wealth.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Money Rules podcast. To listen to more, go to moneyweb.co.za or the MoneyWeb app and follow MoneyWeb News for daily updates. MoneyWeb, your trusted source for business and investment insights.